Hey, Leading Learning listener, if improving as a learning business professional is one of your goals for 2026, make sure to go to leadinglearning.com/summit.
The Learning Business Summit is the only event laser-focused on professionals who lead and work in market-facing businesses that serve adult learners. Across 3 days online, you'll connect with peers and experts to strengthen both your knowledge and your network.
Featuring hands-on practitioners and subject matter experts, the live education sessions are designed for participation, reflection, and, most importantly, action to boost the reach, revenue, and impact of your learning business.
And because leveraging technology is essential for any learning business, the summit also includes demos of LearnTech platforms.
It all happens online January 27th, 28th, and 29th. Go to leadinglearning.com/summit to get all the details and join us for the Learning Business Summit.
Now, on with the episode.
Having a pathway to follow is helpful for learners in today's ambiguous world. Having guides along that pathway is even more helpful. I'm Salisa Steele.
I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
We've talked about and written about and generally spouted the value of pathways for adult lifelong learners.
Yes, and the third sector of education can be difficult for learners to navigate, and pathways are a way that learning businesses can help learners make sense of the choices. By offering prescribed or recommended plans for what learning experiences can lead to what ends, learning businesses provide some clarity in an ambiguous environment.
And while we've talked about the value and importance of pathways, what we've talked about less is the value of guides. And so that's what we want to focus on in this episode, number 407. Because guides are able to further adapt and personalize pathways for specific learners and for specific circumstances and events.
And part of what has us thinking about the value of guides is a recent trip we took, and we've talked about the value of travel before. This was a case where travel proved very valuable to us. We took a trip to Peru, which involved a six-day trek that took us through a variety of landscapes and climates before the big finale, drumroll, of Machu Picchu.
Now, this is definitely not unexplored territory that we were covering.
We weren't going boldly where no one had gone before.
Definitely not. I mean, even if we just take that big finale of Machu Picchu, over 1.5 million people visit that site every year, which means an average of around 2,500 people per day.
But still, it was unfamiliar territory to us, and we weren't just going to Machu Picchu. We were hiking over a whole bunch of terrain before we ever got there, and we decided that it would be good to work with a guide to do that.
And it definitely was a good move for the trip, and part of what value we got out of it was thinking about the value of having a guide, the value of engaging a guide, and us being us, we started thinking about, okay, what could the role of a guide tell us about the role of guidance in lifelong learning and what a learning business might provide?
So this is what both of us were thinking about as we were walking along in a highly beautiful landscape. Not really, of course, but it did get us reflecting, and we came up with six takeaways about the value of guides, and we think those takeaways apply or could apply to your learning business.
So first up, number one is create a framework. And so when you set out on a long journey, there are any number of decisions to be made. And if you're new to making that journey, if you're a novice, you don't really have a great foundation, a great basis for making those decisions, making the choices around, okay, where will I go? How long will I walk? All of those sort of intricate details that are wrapped up in something like a six-day trek.
And so a good guide is obviously going to do that for you. They're going to create that framework for you. They're going to draw on their own expertise and past experiences, as well as what they've observed about the experience of their past clients, because they've done this a whole lot before. And so that's the context of taking a trek, having that sort of guide leading you. But what could that look like for a learning business?
Well, and, you know, I think surfacing and focusing in on the areas of learning that are truly most important for and valuable for your audience. That's one kind of takeaway of what this framework could look like in the context of a learning business.
Yeah. So, you know, what's perennially valuable? What's emerging? That second part around what's emerging is particularly important to that concept of leading learning. But basically, you know, a good guide in the context of a trek and good guide in the context of a learning business is going to just sort of bring things down into an overall manageable context and just conceptually give you the guidance on how to approach things, what it's going to be valuable to do in sort of setting that smaller context, that more defined context in which you're going to pursue learning.
And I think that one way that can manifest itself is in assessments or other ways that you help learners understand where they are and which offerings in your portfolio are going to be appropriate to them, i.e., which offerings do they already have enough background and knowledge and skills to then be able to engage in, and which ones aren't going to be too easy, and which ones aren't going to be too hard. And so that idea of helping people find what's appropriate to them through assessments or other things, I think that's a strong example of what guiding could look like in the context of a learning business.
And of course, even knowing what to assess, what to ask, the kinds of things that are going to help people define their learning experience, that's part of creating that framework as a guide. Another way this happens or could happen is recommendations for how much to do and by when, and maybe different scenarios. For example, if somebody's working full-time, you might go through the material at this pace. If you're between jobs or working part-time, then you might go at a different pace. But in general, again, this is kind of, it's setting up those parameters for you to engage in your learning journey. To extend this metaphor, you know, a guide in the trekking world is leading you on a journey. A guide in the learning business world is also leading people on a journey.
And I think those recommendations that you were just talking about, Jeff, it reminds me of the concept of atomization that we talked about when we were doing our audiobook report on the latest book from Mo Burn and Kim, Beyond Disruption. You know, this idea of breaking down a goal into achievable bits and parts, right? So if you're going to just say, we're going to go out and hike 50 miles, that might seem overwhelming. But when you break it down into, we're going to do 12 miles this day and 10 miles this day, and we're going to have breaks for lunch and we're going to have breaks for snacks, all of that then begins to make it seem much more doable. And what you were talking about, Jeff, in sort of breaking down a learning plan and sort of saying, if you're studying for a certification, for example, that could be a huge body of content. But if you begin to break it down and sort of say, okay, by the end of the first month, you need to have covered these concepts. And then the second month, you're going to move on to these. That begins to make it much more attainable and doable.
So that's the first way in which a guide can be truly valuable, helping to create that framework, just really providing you with a more defined space within which to work and approach to kind of navigating that space. And then, of course, you are actually navigating that space. You're taking a pathway through it. And that's the second big thing that a guide does for you, is helps to manage that path. And there were extended periods along the trail when we were doing the trekking in Peru thing where the guide was really nowhere in sight. But that was possible because we were on the right path in the first place. And at points where the path was not as clear, the guide would point the way. And given that all of this happened in Peru during the rainy season, there were times when the path was actually completely covered by landslides. And in those cases, the guide, and this was in collaboration with other guides, led efforts to actually recreate a path across those landslides.
And also know that the same approach to the path didn't always work for everyone. You know, at the highest altitude part of our trip, where there was the steepest incline, the guide actually recommended horses for a couple of people in our group. And that was based on him having observed us doing a shorter high altitude hike the day before. And so he was able then to make targeted recommendations for each person. For some, he thought, you'll be fine tomorrow. You can do that high altitude, longer, uphill, fairly strenuous, challenging hike. For others, he thought, you know what, you might not actually enjoy doing that, or it might be sort of pushing you beyond your limits, but we have this option where you can take a horse to the top and then walk down.
And that's, again, you know, based on what we were saying before, that the guide has expertise. The guide has observed many other people go through this journey, this experience before, and can, you know, then draw on that to help to manage the path for each of the travelers. So again, what might this look like for a learning business? How do we extend this metaphor into our day-to-day work?
Yeah, well, I think that managing the path in the context of a learning business could look like more personalized feedback on progress. So if you begin to notice that a learner is going through material more slowly than anticipated, or if performance on assessments is lower than anticipated, then that would be a moment to recalibrate. Similarly, if a learner is kind of flying through all the content or scoring perfectly, might also be a sign that it's time to recalibrate and perhaps offer something more challenging in that case. Obviously less challenging in the case of someone moving slower or not performing as well. But it's really about kind of assessing the progress that individual learners are making and then refining, recalibrating as needed.
And similar is helping that learner to actually self-assess and be self-aware. So try out this test, which the corollary in the trekking world might be a short hike, you know, as opposed to taking on the whole Sakantai Trail, which we did. Try something out first to see how you do, and then that's going to help you predict how you're going to do on the big test, the big exam, or in this case, the longer, the bigger hike that we ended up taking.
And this might be a good place to note that while we're talking about guides, and we're talking specifically in our trek about actual person as guide, what we're talking about with learning businesses is guidance in general, which might be provided by people, by facilitators, by instructors, but some of this may also be baked into your technology, for example, and you might be looking at data, looking at reports that come out of your learning technology platform to sort of see, okay, is this person slowing down or not? And so it could be more automated. So we're talking about guidance kind of and guides, somewhat metaphorically, could be people, could also be other ways in which you're providing that guidance.
And of course, this is one of the big potential areas for something like artificial intelligence, is that it can play that guide role on a highly scalable basis. I mean, you've got to have the data there, you've got to have the good practices in place to support that happening. But once it does, AI as guide is a very powerful concept. At Tagoras, we partner with professional and trade associations, continuing education units, training firms, and other learning businesses to help them understand market realities and potential, to connect better with existing customers and find new ones, and to make smart investment decisions around product development and portfolio management. Drawing on our expertise in lifelong learning, market assessment, and strategy formulation, we can help you achieve greater reach, revenue, and impact. Learn more at tagoras.com/more.
So our third takeaway from our trekking experience is that a guide can help focus your attention. And so when you're hiking through mountains and you're doing that for day after day, there's a lot to take in and there's a lot that can capture your eye, and it's good for hikers to be free to let their minds wander and take in kind of whatever part of the scene strikes them. But there are also things that you want to make sure that a hiker doesn't miss on a journey.
Like, for example, the huge variety of orchids that grow in the Peruvian jungles. I mean, they're just everywhere. I had no idea. But our guide definitely helped us to tune into, you know, the many different varieties along the way. And of course, now I'm aware that there are even many more that we haven't seen yet, and probably do a little more looking on that.
And so a good guide will call your attention to things like that, things that maybe you might have noticed one or two kinds of orchids, some of the bigger, flashier ones growing closer to the trail. But when, you know, they can sort of pull back the foliage and show you the tiny little orchid right there, you begin to have a new appreciation for that particular environment, that particular climate. And so that's a great example of a guide calling your attention to something that you might have overlooked if left to your own devices.
Right. So orchids, learning business. How do we tie these two things together?
Well, I think one area would be around pruning, which this kind of continues the vegetation analogy there. But we know from all that learning science has taught us is that pruning learning content down to the essential is so, so, so important so that we're not overwhelmed by extraneous information as learners. So you really want to prune so that you can focus in on what's most important. In the case of the guide with the orchids, part of that is like literally parting the leaves to sort of call your attention, forefronting then that little tiny orchid that's down there and allowing you to appreciate it. In the context of learning, then it is about making sure that you are not hiding the key content and the key information by having too much there. So it is about pruning so that then what's left is visible, is on display, is going to be something that the learner won't miss.
Yeah, and we talk about this a lot in the Presenting for Impact course that we've made to help subject matter experts sort of improve the educational impact of their teaching. And just this whole process of getting attention in the first place and then maintaining it. And pruning is a big part of that. If you put too much in front of people, they don't know where to put their attention. So you have to guide them to where to focus that attention and use both art and science and how you do that, whether it's through how your slides are created or how you stand in front of the room and present yourself or whatever the particular teaching and learning medium is, really paying attention to attention and how you're going to earn that from the learners and keep focusing it in the right way throughout the experience.
So the fourth takeaway we have is that a good guide will challenge you. They'll challenge the learner. And so a guide is not just there to sort of passively go along for the ride. No, the guide is there, an active participant observing what you're doing, trying to figure out when and where and how to push you a bit, but of course also doing that in a supportive way.
Yeah, so, you know, on one day, for example, we had to cross the Urubamba River twice using a really pretty rudimentary hand-towed cable car. And this was the end of the rainy season, so it was really like a raging river. Like, the water was flowing very, very fast.
And fairly high up above the water as well. So
right.
Probably like 40 feet.
40, 50 feet up, you know, and you got this churning water going underneath you. And one of the hikers, a person who was in front of me, was clearly frightened of doing this, which is certainly understandable. But, you know, one of the guides really encouraged her and rode across with her both times. And I'm sure that, you know, when she looks back on that experience and tells friends and family about it, like for years to come, that's going to be something she talks about.
Another example was, we mentioned already, end of rainy season, there were landslides that actually closed the path in multiple places. And yes, we used the cable cards in a couple of places to kind of get around some landslides. But the other approach was the guides sort of rehacked a pathway across mm-hmm. the landslide. So you're walking across land that had just recently fallen. And
yeah.
So that also gave some hikers pause to sort of be walking across that landslide that seemed like it might begin to slide again. And so there was at least one hiker that I saw who she sort of balked at crossing. And so a guide went across, held her hand and led her across. So again, it's this idea of really being there, providing support, being attuned to what any individual is feeling and figuring out as a guide, what support can you offer? What can you do that will make it feel manageable?
And I think this speaks to how important trust and authority are for guides, because I'm not going to just follow somebody across a new path through a landslide or go across a raging river on what looks like a flimsy cable car unless I trust that these people know what the hell they're doing and that they have the authority to say that this is something to do. And you know that they've done it before many times, that they're not going to take a risk that, they'll be risking their own lives and health in this. So they have to earn that trust. They have to have that recognized authority to be effective as guides.
And in the context of learning and learning businesses, this correlates, in my mind, to appropriate challenge. And that's a really big deal in learning. If something's too easy, then there's not really going to be any growth or learning because the learner doesn't really have to engage and apply herself. If it's too hard, then the learner may kind of give up, throw her hands up and sort of walk away. So again, no real growth or learning. So there's a lot about pitching the learning experience to the appropriate level for the learner. And Jeff, I know this came up in your recent conversation with Clark Quinn, that importance of really pitching the right level for the learner.
It did. I mean, it's so important in practice and in application, which themselves are such important concepts to learning that often don't get the attention that they should. And often wrapped up in that is just emotions. You know, emotions are a big deal that, again, often don't get as much airtime, as much attention as they could. But, you know, to go back to that example, well, of, you know, crossing the landslide or the woman who was struggling with the cable car, there's a lot of emotion wrapped up in that. I mean, some of that was some genuine fear, obviously some anxiety that was at a manageable level. It was, you know, it was the appropriate level of challenge. You could get past it, but that core emotion being there is a big part of what makes that experience memorable, is going to cement it into long-term memory and be something that somebody carries forward with them. That's integral to effective learning.
And that also came up in your conversation with Clark Quinn, the importance of emotion.
Oh, yeah.
And that how we tend to focus too much on cognition without mm-hmm. paying attention to the fact that if emotion is not managed, if it's too high, then it may actually interfere with cognition, right? If a little bit of anxiety, a little bit of fear may actually help with learning, but you know, if it's too much, then it's going to tip over and someone's not going to be able to pay attention and actually do what is required of them. So it's that balance. And so I think, again, a good guide is going to pay attention not only to the cognitive aspect and whether something's too hard or too easy, but also the emotional side. Is it too stressful? Is it too anxiety producing to be useful?
Right. So to briefly recap where we are so far, that good guide is going to create the framework, the sort of overall approach to the experience, is going to manage the path through the experience, not dictate the path, mind you, but manage that path or help you manage that path. It's going to help with focusing your attention in the most meaningful and valuable ways. It's going to challenge you, as we were just talking about. And then fifth one, a good guide is going to help you celebrate.
And the guides would typically hold up their hands for high fives at the end of, you know, particularly hard climbs, or you sort of got to the summit, high five. Or they'd say, okay, well, here we are. Here's this beautiful scenic spot. Stand here for a picture, you know. And so again, they're trying to help us see our accomplishment and celebrate with us that we've achieved something.
Our particular guide, he had an approach to taking photos where he would, or videos really. So he would start the video, then walk towards you, and then have the camera like swoop over top of you. So it looked like a drone or something was diving in to take the video of you, which it was very effective. We all appreciated it. And there are other things too, like one afternoon, this was probably about halfway through. We'd done most of the big hikes that we're going to do. And there was an afternoon where we were able to go to some hot springs. And this happened to be after we'd been spending the day crossing landslides and, you know, lots of distance, lots of stress, and being able to essentially celebrate a little bit by sitting in some warm hot springs water was a great thing.
So what does helping learners celebrate look like for a learning business? I think one obvious way is that, especially along those longer pathways, say, you know, working towards a certification, you want to celebrate the accomplishments that a learner makes along the way. So rather than waiting until they actually pass that certification exam, which might be a year down the road, you want to help them celebrate as they've maybe taken a practice test or as they've covered a certain amount of content in their review. And so you begin to help them see what they've already achieved and build some momentum to continue to carry them forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we got little certificates at the end that said we'd accomplished this, which I wasn't really even expecting that. But to be honest, like a fist bump up at 15,000 feet mm-hmm. on the Salkantay Trail probably meant a whole lot more to me than that certificate's ever going to mean. And all of these are often, these things are kind of extrinsic. They're these little gestures, tokens, that sort of thing. But, you know, hopefully you're really tying them into, you're tapping into the learner's intrinsic motivation as you're doing it. I mean, you know, these guides know it at the point that we've gotten up to that 15,000 feet and they're giving us that high five, that internally we know we've done something that got us there. And really the high five is just the exclamation point on it, so to speak.
So then our sixth and final takeaway that we're going to offer is that a guide, a good guide, has you do. So there's nothing theoretical about hiking 50 miles. Every day you have to get up, and often you have to get up very early. I think there was a 4:30 a.m. wake up call many mornings.
More than once, yeah.
You have to get up, put on your boots, you have to grab your hiking poles, and then you put one foot in front of another. So this isn't about just studying the map and sort of thinking about the pathway. It's about actually walking the pathway.
That's so true, because I can remember studying the path. I mean, studying the map. And we have the map of what we're going to do. And it's a pale shadow of what it's actually like to do it. It was helpful, but still, as you said, it's the actual doing that helps. And so once again, we can tie this back to good practices for learning businesses.
So what having you do might look like in a learning business is practice. An application, and just really making sure that you're building that into your learning experiences and giving your learners chances to think about how concepts apply to their lives and their jobs, and not just think, but actually do something related to that.
We do actually have a briefing we should mention, Practice Makes Profit, which goes into how important practice is as part of creating impactful learning experiences that are going to attract learners back again, time over time, learning experiences they're going to be willing to pay for, learning experiences their employers are going to be willing to fund. So this doing as a path to learning is extremely important.
So again, this guidance that we've been talking about may take the shape of humans, of human guides, instructors, facilitators, helping your learners. It may be more built in, kind of baked into some of the technology. It may leverage AI. It may leverage other data that you have. But the idea is to really think about not just providing the pathway, but to also think about how can you guide your learners in their progress along that pathway and making the appropriate decisions for them as they move along that pathway.
Right. And this is all part and parcel of good, effective instructional design. To go back to my conversation with Clark Quinn, I mean, this is really gets at a lot of what he talks about when he talks about making experiences meaningful for learners. When you're doing that, when you're making the experiences meaningful, you are serving these functions. You're doing these things that we've just described as a good guide.
I will mention now too that if you check out the show notes for this episode at leadinglearning.com/episode407, we'll be sure to include a few photos of the trek.
I'm sure they will be stunning.
Having a pathway to follow is helpful for learners in today's ambiguous world. Having guides along that pathway is even more helpful. So think about how your learning business might offer both pathways and guides to help your learners.
At leadinglearning.com/episode407, you'll find a few picks from our trek, show notes, a transcript, and options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you haven't yet, please subscribe.
We'd be grateful if you would take a minute to rate us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, especially if you enjoy the show. Jeff and I personally appreciate reviews and ratings, and your reviews and ratings help the podcast show up when others search for content on leading a learning business.
And please spread the word about Leading Learning. You can do that in a one-on-one exchange with a colleague, or you can do it through social media. In the show notes at leadinglearning.com/episode407, you'll find links to connect with us on X, LinkedIn, and Facebook.
Thanks again, and see you next time on the Leading Learning Podcast.